Aung San Suu Kyi, Myanmar's chief executive and Nobel Peace Prize laureate, spoke to the United Nations yesterday about an issue that has begun to haunt her nation, the long-standing persecution of the Rohingya, a Muslim minority. Some 400,000 Rohingya have braved landmines to flee across the border into Bangladesh ahead of what the UN calls a textbook example of ethnic cleansing. Suu Kyi was expected to condemn the genocide yesterday, but confined herself to generalities and refused to assign blame. Myanmar's armed forces are charged with the oppression of the Rohingya, burning entire villages to the ground and hundreds in recent weeks, according to Human Rights Watch. The questions are raised, is a Nobel Peace laureate presiding over a genocide? Does she have control of her own military? Dr. Grace Chang is an associate professor of political science at Hawaii Pacific University. She's on hand to help us sort out what's going on. Dr. Chang, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Chris.
Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you for having me here today.
This is a country in which the power of the military is always something to be considered. Is that true?
Yes, that's definitely true. The executive does not have control over the military, so the civilian and the military branch of the government operate distinctly from our system.
They flat out does not have control. That's something that's pretty hard for Americans to understand.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, in this case, it's really hard to read the situation because, as you said, the Myanmar state counselor Aung San Suu Kyi has not spoken out effectively to, assign, the responsibility to the military and other security forces that might be involved in this. It's hard to say what she is intending. Is she afraid of addressing the military directly? But, on the other hand, her office, as well as other branches of the civilian government in Myanmar, they have actively engaged in a lot of the disinformation campaigns that's basically hiding what's happening, denying the reports that are coming out that are various different organizations, including, some of the UN reports, UN groups that have looked into the situation have reported. They have been quite aggressive in this as well. Following her speech, which she gave from Myanmar's capital, and she delivered in English, so it was really intended for an international community. Many in Myanmar really, praised what she said. There were many people reportedly in the streets who were very happy about, her refusal to really acknowledge some of the information and the international attention given to this issue. So there's a larger kind of political phenomenon going on here in Myanmar, which is really in denial, or just don't really believe that the Rohingya are citizens of the country.
And clearly, as you said, there was her speech was warmly received by her people, at least her Buddhist population back
mm-hmm.
home.
Yes,
but it also indicates that population is entirely happy with what has been described by objective observers as a genocide.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that is the case. So, that's an indication of some of these trends that are going on in the politics in that country, which are turning very much towards this kind of a Buddhist nationalism, a nationalism that's really based on, the identity that true Buddhists, true citizens of Myanmar are Buddhists. So it's kind of been building up, it's been building up over the decades, but it seems is particularly intense in the last few years since 2012, when most recent wave of anti-Muslim attacks all over the country, not just in the Rakhine State, has been taking place.
Well, if a true Myanmar citizen is a Buddhist, it also implies that a true Buddhist citizen of Myanmar is entirely happy to let the massacre of a Muslim population continue. This makes me think of the Indian partition in 48, where mm-hmm. Half the country tried to kill the other half. I mean, is it Where does all this, hostility to murderous hostility come from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, a lot of the reports have it that, you know, the military security forces had handed out weapons to, the Buddhist or another non-Muslim residents in the Rakhine State to go and attack, you know, the Rohingya. And some of this intense anti-Muslim, but this very, you know, radical Buddhist nationalism, it has its roots going back probably to the 30s, and this rooted in the idea that, as a result, especially of colonialism, many members of the Buddhist monkhood felt that the Buddhism was under attack, was being threatened by the British presence, who brought in, missionaries and also workers, from other parts of Asia to work in the colonial projects. So this kind of really has been building up over several decades and has recently, transpired after 2012. One of these Buddhist nationalist monks, Uratu, who's a leader in one of the Buddhist movements, he got out of jail, and it seems to coincide with the violence that took place after that.
You have to wonder what, Aung San Suu Kyi yesterday did not really give us much of an indication of where her heart is. At least it struck me that the speech was very general in tone, and you have to wonder, as she refuses to assign blame, why would you refuse to assign blame, and B, how can someone who's been looked at as a kind of avatar of peace look the other way on clear evidence of mass murder?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that she sort of is continuing to do. She did recognize and state that she was sorry that there were Muslims fleeing from the country, but she did sort of suggest, and she has in the past, that the situation there is very complex and that there may be many sides to blame, whereas the outcome of whatever is happening, and the military has blocked any access to the areas to really know, but from what we know from reports from people who have fled the area and for groups working in the area, most of the victims are innocent civilians. I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of them who have fled and who suffered great violence on themselves, their families, who've been killed or raped.
Yeah.
So the refusal to kind of acknowledge the disproportionality of the situation, and that this crisis is really bearing on one particular ethnic group in something that looks like, if not genocide, then ethnic cleansing.
Well, I mean, that's a pretty fine distinction to be made. Murder is murder, right?
Right. Yes, I don't think that satisfies. That distinction is really kind of just technical.
Yeah. The other thing that has often been said about Burma, we referred earlier to the position of the military in the government, and as you said, it operates unchecked in that country. I'm thinking of a very brief experience in that part of the world that I had 40 years ago, in which the northern part of then Burma was described as more or less a lawless part of the country, devoted in large part to growing opium, which had a huge part of a kind of underground economy in Southeast Asia. Is that still part of what's going on in Myanmar?
I don't know so much about if that's really going on. I think there's definitely, as far as economic interest by international actors, there's definitely, since the country's opened up, it's been attractive. It is a land of that's rich in natural resources.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something that, reportedly the military has really cashed in on, as far as, they control a lot of the land. A lot of the areas, for example, in the eastern part of the country where there were conflicts with other ethnic groups, some of the land has been claimed or taken over by the military. So, I mean, the displacements definitely provide some economic gains for some parties.
For some, but, it's always ironic when you hear of a country that's rich in natural resources and is somehow manages to be a poor country.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't seem to have really trickled down to all the people who could benefit from the profits being made. You know, and you're talking about the military. So one of the developments, you know, that coming out of this UN gathering that began yesterday is, you know, the U.S. State Department has promised $35 million in humanitarian aid for the Rohingya refugees. And also Vice President Pence addressed the Security Council and you know, stated that the international community should take strong and swift action to end this crisis. And at the same time, the U.K. suspended aid to the military as well as training. So there's definitely a lot of momentum to put, like, real, concrete, you know, consequences onto the Myanmar state, whether it's the civilian government or the military, to get them to be more forthright with helping to address this crisis.
I have to wonder whose pockets that $35 million is going to end up in.
Well, you know, it's $35 million is humanitarian for the Rohingya, so hopefully that will go to those who are over in Bangladesh. But there are, you know, which there are many. There are apparently over 800,000 in Bangladesh from various waves of violence against Rohingya. But there are also, you know, some internally displaced Rohingya within the Rakhine states, although reports did show that a good number of those detention areas where they were held were also burned. So,
hard to imagine what life is like in a so-called detention area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Dr. Cheng, thank you very much for talking with us, and I appreciate the. I hope we get an opportunity in future to check in, because this is a pretty fluid situation we're seeing. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Grace Cheng is an associate professor of political science at Hawaii Pacific University, specializing in Asian politics, and she has written as well on nationalism and conflict in Asia.